Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Puranjan, Text 45. Sattu parikrita dvaraha purastasyastu dveyada pitakvesaya gatyatam Tasyam yakas chaneshwara. Translation. Of the 9 gates in that city, 7 were on the surface and 2 were subterranean. A total of 9 doors were constructed and these led to different places. All the gates were used by the city's governor. Purport. The 7 gates of the body that are situated upward are the 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 2 ears, and 1 mouth. The 2 subterranean gates are the rectum and the genitals. The king, or the ruler of the body, who is the living entity, uses all these doors to enjoy different types of material pleasure. The system of opening different gates to different places is still evident in old Indian cities. Formerly, a capital was surrounded by walls, and one passed through various gates to go to various cities or to a specific direction. In old Delhi, there are still remnants of surrounding wall and various gates known as the Kashmiri Gate, the Lahori Gate, etc. Similarly, in Ahmedabad, there is a Delhi Gate. The point of this simile is that a living entity wants to enjoy different types of material opulences, and to this end, nature has given him various holes in his body that he can utilize for sense enjoyments. That's pretty funny. Various holes in the body that one can utilize for sense enjoyment. Reminds me of a devotee who lived next door from me in Vrindavan, and he was chanting 64 rounds, and for breakfast he would just put some bananas in the hole, he used to say. So in this way, we indeed can do many things with our material bodies for sense gratification, and try to enjoy all these various things, and it's nice. We can look out of the window now and see snow, and you can immediately think, snow, I can enjoy, I can ski, or go on a sledge down the hill, as one sannyasi did here a few years ago, and broke his leg. So I'm not going to do that, because that is the problem with the snow here. It's got 2 sides. It's the nature of the material world. It's beautiful snow. It's fun. You can put it in people's neck, in their clothes. You can make balls, throw in their face, or rub it in someone's face as you're coming up. In other words, snow has all kinds of varieties of fun. You can make a snowman and put a carrot on the nose. And these things are great. I remember the days I used to dance in ecstasy when there was snow. This was the perfection of life. So snow is enjoyable, but by now I know also the other side of snow. I have also driven in December with the Sankirtan party, and suddenly we saw all these cars that were off the road, and next moment we sort of realizing it's slippery here, and we were going fast, and somehow or other we didn't go off the road. But you know, there were other times that devotees did go off the road, if you know what I mean. It was and is not an uncommon thing, and I've also done a drive where the car went in a spin and did a 360 degree spin. In other words, after the spin was over, I went in the same direction. That was, I guess, Krishna was having, interfered, or my karma, or whatever it was. So the material world is like this. Gradually we begin to realize that there are 2 sides to things. as we mature a little, we realize it's not all a big game. When you're a kid, you just think, this is great. This is just one big game. It's fantastic. This world is so good. It's just all far out, beautiful, exciting, and full of variety, and all we have to do is enjoy it. Later on, after you've had your fingers between the door and a few other varieties of things, you realize that it's not all enjoyment. Watch out, a door. The last time I had my fingers in between a door was four fingers in between the door of a car, when some helpful devotee was trying to help Maharaj out of the car and closed the door while I was still in the process of getting out. Four fingers in the door of the car. Just at that moment, many things were happening. From my mouth, like a siren, automatically came out, "Open the door!" That came out. And at the same time, in my mind, the thought was, my fingers are finished now. This is it. And the rest of my life, I will have to live, you know, with little stumps like this. Huh? I was quite convinced that was it. And anyway, when they opened the door, to my surprise, the fingers were still on there. And I just realized they designed it for that. This is amazing. These guys in the factories, they've thought about it. They've thought about it that this would happen. And they've designed it, they've left a gap for the fingers and put some rubber in between. Brilliant. Amazing. Amazing. So they were still on there. I even played harmonium that evening, although a little slow. So Krishna arranges it. But this is the material world. It's not all just a big playground. Prabhupada, on his morning walk, was walking past a children's park, and it said something, children's fairyland. And Prabhupada looked at it, turned around, lifted his cane, pointed at the city with the skyscrapers and said, adults' fairyland. And in this way, we play, and Puranjan and Puranjani are getting ready. Oh yes, oh yes. The city is nicely arranged. Everything is comfy now. And it's just starting. It's going to be good. And of course, we know that the city is well protected by a five-hooded snake, somehow or other, who the five life heirs, let me see if I can remember them. There is Apana, Udana, Vyana, and five, my God. Three I've got already, not too bad. Huh? Upwards air, then there is Vyana expanding and shrinking. In this way, whatever, there are a few more. There's all these different airs within the body, and it's all going on because of air. The joints in the body are actually working on air. They have air suspension in them. Yes, in the West they don't know, but in India it's a well-known fact. And therefore it is said that if you suffer from constant indigestion, then finally it all turns into so much gas, and then that goes, besides that it comes out of certain holes in the body, and it also goes into the joints, and there it causes arthritis. Right. So in this way, we see how much fun one can have in this city with nine gates. Gradually, that serpent that is protecting us with time is losing its power. This is what's going on next. Time flies in the exchange between Puranjan and Puranjani, and next, old age kicks in. And slowly, slowly, things break down, little by little. And it goes like that. One tooth gone. You just break a hip, and then it's never going to be the same. No, sorry, not anymore. You might get 90% back, you know, if you break something, but never 100%. No, that's how it is. You break something once, and then, you know, 90%, and sometimes it plays up. You know, if you've had a fracture, you can tell the weather, right? Okay, it's going to rain. I'm telling you, it's going to rain. How you know? Well, you know, my old scars from my broken bones are aching, and they're telling us it's going to rain. And sure enough, the next day is raining. There you see a walking barometer. But in this way, we are really beginning to realize it's not just fun, this material world. It's not just fun. And little by little, it goes away. Sometimes calculations are done how much fun you really have. First you're a kid and, you know, one moment you laugh, next moment you cry because you just don't know how to do it. You know what I mean? You want to, but you don't quite know how to really do it. Then you become expert. They say at about 12, you know how to do it. You're expert. And then, of course, well, in one sense, you're just beginning. And then it carries on, and then, you know, you sort of know how to enjoy. You know how to do it, how to take the right opportunities and avoid the ones that are not so good. Sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, the business of the mind. So we spend our time with this, but meanwhile, time is running out. I tell a story in this regard, how once I was in Cologne for a Sunday feast, and they had a real Russian clown, original from a state circus, and they're good. And this guy was expert, he could spin plates and balls around, and at one point he was sitting on a chair and he had like balls spinning on his fingers, balls spinning on his toes, and to make it even more perfect, one ball spinning on a stick on his nose. So it was a good act and everybody was really excited. The only question I had is, what did it have to do with Krishna consciousness? I mean, I was sort of thinking, well, I was giving the lecture next and I was thinking, what am I going to make of this? And some other Krishna gave me some inspiration. And I was thinking, yes, imagine, there is the stream of opportunities. And they come. And when you're young, oh, you take three or four and you spin them around and play with them. No problem. But as time moves along, you lose that sort of elastic capacity of youth and you become more purposeful. Now you don't play anymore. It gets serious. Take the good ones. Okay, here comes a good one. Whoop, got it. Ooh, the stream goes by. Another good one. Whoop, got it. And time moves along and time moves along. And as time moves along, the opportunities keep on coming. And, you know, everyone, and it's just like, just wait a minute, you know. Anyway, it wasn't that good. And you let it go. What to do? At the end, there are two old people sitting on a bench and they're watching the stream of opportunities. And one says to the other, there goes a good one. And that's about it. Yeah. So, Our capacity to enjoy becomes diminished quite rapidly with time. This is, Srila Prabhupada somewhere says between 17 and 30. That is prime time. Okay, prime time between 17 and 30. The only problem is that between 17 and 30, usually we have so many traumas from our childhood that psychologically we are not able to enjoy, because we're all mentally cut up. So we have all the facilities, but mentally we're a mess, and therefore we're not enjoying. After 30, you get a little wiser, and by the time you're 40, mentally you're settled. You know, you don't worry about anything anymore, but you don't have the power to enjoy anymore. So it's one of those, it's what they call catch-22. It means you can't win. In any direction you go, you lose, right? You can't win. Catch 22. You go left or right, you're going to lose. So this is the material world, actually. And at one point, one comes to his senses and realizes that it doesn't work. All right, the story of Puranjan is lots of fun. Puranjan was attached till the end of his days, and as a result, he was always thinking of his wife, and therefore, in the next life, Puranjan became a woman. Still, in the story, it is so that Puranjan was very fortunate because in that life, he became Queen Vaidarbhi, who had a very pious king as the husband, and served that king very nicely, and as a result spent a whole life in devotional service, and at the end of life went even back to Godhead. So, and good, all good. Narada Muni is sort of making it clear, right? Don't waste your time just playing around in these material bodies, trying to enjoy the different holes that are in it. It sounds so funny, right? Enjoy the whole. That's all we're doing, if you think about it. Anyway, so Puranjan then, or Maharaj Prachinibarhisat, for whom the story is told by Narada, is sort of pointed towards spiritual life. Now we are already there. We are in spiritual life, but there are a few remnants of the Puranjan, Puranjani enjoyment, and sometimes we sort of fall back into the hole, if you know what I mean. Again, in the old trap, again, some old attachments reoccur and temporarily become overwhelmed. After all, Maya is very powerful. And Maya, it is said by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Maya is not only outside, Maya is also inside. Maya has infiltrated. Just like when two armies are opposing each other, then the armies are not only standing opposite of each other, but spies have also infiltrated into the ranks of the enemy. In the same way, Maya is also in our mind, and she knows what we think. And Maya, therefore, knows your secret, most private desires. And yes, she does. And yes, and not only that, then what she's doing, she just has this throwing potency, the prapsekatmika shakti, and she takes exactly that, what you always wanted, and just when you're getting serious about spiritual life, she puts that opportunity under your nose. Doom, doom, doom. Oh my God. Oh no. The chance of my life. Oh no. What to do now? Anyway, I can always take up devotional service tomorrow again. Then we go for it. For a day in Maya, what to do? Or for a few years? Or for a few lifetimes? It goes like that. So this throwing potency can capture us in this way, and is very tricky. Then there's the covering potency, the avaranatmika shakti, which is the philosophy that, well, it's based on wishful thinking. Wishful thinking is basically that we hope that it's all going to be perfect. The example would be a young girl who's always dreaming of the dream princess, who's coming on his horse, and he never comes. Right? That guy on the horse never comes, but one day someone comes around the corner. He doesn't have a horse, and he has cauliflower ears. But anyway, you've waited so long. So, you know, what can you do? Here is the prince, right? Cauliflower ears and all. And you can all have, and it's going to go on for many generations. Right? Genetically, those cauliflowers will remain. And you're going to be seeing them for a long time in the family pictures. But because of our desires, we want to see that it is that we are a success. Yes, 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 I'm getting my desires fulfilled. Yes, yes, this is great. Yes, yes, it is wonderful. Yes, I am enjoying it. Yes, and then up to the point where even someone who is with a broken leg in the hospital and you are, how are you? Great. Huh? Yeah, I can see. This is the nature of the covering potency. So, like this, we are carrying on in this material world, and we want it to be full of happiness. Now that I'm telling stories, I also have the Mr. Bean story. You know, Mr. Bean, he comes into a hotel, and there, you know, with a little mini, which he parks outside. He comes into the hotel, and on the desk of the hotel there is one of these bells, you know, with a metal pin, and you have to hit on it. So Bean goes like, ping, 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 ping. And then he wants a room, and they show him a room all the way upstairs, and he looks around in the room, and he takes it, right? All right, he's in the room. Then he looks around in the room and he is thinking, well, let me make it a little nicer. So he opens up his suitcase and he takes out a Black & Decker drill and different paintings. Drills a hole in the wall and starts to hang the paintings. Then he has a flower vase with plastic flowers, and he takes it out and he puts it. And at the end, out of the suitcase, comes a sign, home sweet home, beat, and that also goes on the wall. And then, after all that, he wants to use the bathroom and realizes that there is no attached bathroom, but that, you know, it's out in the corridor. So he goes and checks it out. And he sees that it's right there, right, next to his room. So, ping, he puts a saw blade on the drill and cuts out a door, has some hinges also, fixes the whole thing, locks the bathroom from the inside, and everything great, you know, puts on his sleeping hat, takes his teddy bear, and goes to bed. Ready for the night. It's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. Why is it ridiculous? Because he treats a temporary situation like a permanent one. Isn't it? And that's the ridiculous thing. And we are just as ridiculous. Yes, that's the situation. So in this way, time goes by. So as devotees, of course, we know better. And we know about the eternal goal. And it is that eternal goal that we should just keep in mind. And we should invest in it now, because this is the amazing nature of Krishna consciousness, is that here in the temporary domain we have access to the eternal. That is the amazing thing. Here no one else has. When I was before Krishna consciousness, well, I was part of the 60s and early 70s, and as a result, I took a few things. I smoked a few things and I swallowed a few things that changed my perception of reality a little bit. And one day, I was in the garden of my parents, and I felt I was in an aquarium. I suddenly realized I was in an aquarium. Yeah. You know, I just, it dawned upon me, my God, you know, I always thought I was exploring the world, but I'm actually in an aquarium. And being in an aquarium, I was, well, how do I get out of this aquarium? It became a big question in my mind. How do I get out of the aquarium? But there was no way out of the aquarium. That was the situation. Until Krishna consciousness, there was no way out. There was no way out. Did you also experience it like that? That you felt caught in the situation of your life? You didn't want it, but there was just no way out. So for years, I was looking for a way out. Is there a way out? Is there a way out of here? There is no way out. Again and again, Maya told me, there is no way out. Just accept it. Just be normal. No, there must be a way out. There is no way out. Just be like everybody else. Son, my father said, life is a compromise. No way! It can't be. No, there must be perfection. Son, life is a compromise. Maybe for you, but not for me. Anyway, I had these big discussions with my father in those days. Looking for a way out. But in Krishna consciousness, we have it. Because although we are in the temporary aquarium, swimming up and down, at the same time, we can make a connection with the eternal. You can put an apple on the altar, and that's eternal benefit. Very easy. We can do devotional service. So, anyway, Puranjan or Puranjani, we're not going to make a big thing about it. All right, you're in love anyway, you know, in lust, of course, haha, right? But whatever, right? You may consider it, right? We don't care. We're not going to worry about it. We're not going to speak the whole day about it, about the fact that that your mind is taking you for a ride. We're going to leave that simply for what it is and say, just connect to Krishna in devotional service. More devotional service. That's the key. That is the answer. That will change everything. That will do it. Cultivating detachment will never work. Very, very difficult. Just by trying to become renounced, fasting on every Ekadasi, nice, but more important is just get to work. Right? Work? Yeah, work. Work for Krishna. That is ultimately the one thing that will make the difference. Simply hard work in devotional service. Gopya kamat, bayat kamsu, dvesat chenyanayan ripa, vrishnir sambandat, yuyam bhaktya vayam viba. The gopis, they have that special transcendental lusty relationship with Krishna. The kamsa attained perfection through his fear. The vrishnis, through their family relationships. And we, the ordinary devotees, through hard work in devotional service, can attain perfection. So Srimad Bhagavatam is also making the same point. And if somehow or other we can just take shelter of devotional service, then we can overcome our material desires. Yes, you say, yes, yes, I have faith in that, and I'm still waiting. They're not completely gone yet, but I keep on doing my devotional service. And as soon as they're gone, I become renounced. No, not exactly. We see that in the Vedic culture, there is Varna Ashram. And Varna Ashram is an interesting thing because, it's like an alarm clock. Yeah? At age 50, the alarm clock goes off. And you know how it is when the alarm clock goes off. You just go like, no, it's not true. The first reaction is, it's not true. It's not going off now. I'm dreaming it. Right? I'm dreaming that the alarm clock's going off. So it's not really going off. I can keep on sleeping. Or you try and turn it into something else. It's not an alarm clock. It's the car of the neighbors who's backing up and is making that noise. So I can keep on sleeping. But that alarm clock is very persistent, you know what I mean, to a point where it doesn't work anymore. And one devotee here in Radhadesh had a special lila with alarm clocks. He was staying in the Brahmachari ashram upstairs in room number 20, which is the big room where they put anybody and everybody who doesn't have a room, or they used to, right, and pack it up. And then, you know, everyone would put an alarm clock, right? All the devotees. The first one would put it at 2 o'clock, but of course not get up. And the thing would beep. And then the next, there was another one who put it at 2:15, and they wouldn't get up either. 2:30 wouldn't get up. 3 o'clock wouldn't get up. 3:30 wouldn't get up. It's like until finally this devotee lost it and got out of bed and grabbed all the alarm clocks and started to throw them out of the window one after another. Which is very understandable when you live in a Hare Krishna temple. I can sympathize with this principle, because nothing is so disturbing as an alarm clock. So, at age 50, pancha chordam vanam vrajet, it begins to beep, the alarm clock. Beep, 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 beep. This is a nasty alarm clock. So, panchachordam vanam vrajet, at the age 50, one is meant to start thinking of vanaprastha. I said it the other day somewhere, and I'm beginning to repeat myself, a sign that I'm getting old. So, I'll just say it again. See, my grandmother was like that. She told us the same stories again and again, and she didn't mind. That's a sign that you're old. Panchachordam vanam vrajet. At age 50, we simply have to become renounced. Yes, we have to become renounced, and we have to start giving up our sense gratification. And now I even forgot what I was going to say. That shows I'm getting senile as well. So, what to do? Little by little, we lose it. Yes, up to 50, we may be in the Grihastha ashram or not. Up to 50, we spend for this life to make all the arrangements. You need to get your house together, and a little more money is needed. Up to 50, we work for this. And after 50, we work for the next life. So after 50, that's it. You're no longer allowed to work for this life. You have to start working for the next. So you have to simplify your life, and you have to just basically minimize all your involvement with the material energy so that you have time for the eternal activity, because in our thing, we're aiming at no next life, isn't it? Yeah? Going back to Godhead. So after 50, we got to get serious, very serious. But, well, I learned this lesson when I was 5 years old. I could read somehow or other. I was proud of it because I hadn't gone to school yet, but I had learned to read. And then my grandfather died, and my father took me to a cemetery for the first time. And I wasn't so impressed to see the grave of my grandfather. That didn't do anything to me. But I was reading the tombstones. And as I was reading the tombstones, I saw the dates. And then I saw the date on one tombstone of somebody who was born after me and who was already there. And that really impressed me. My grandfather, I didn't care. But the thought that I myself could be in the grave and that somebody younger than me, and I was only 5, was already dead, that shocked me. God, I thought about it for the rest of the day. Yeah, that was a serious realization I got there. And I still remember it now. You know, you can die any moment. any moment. After I had a serious operation in India and I had just survived it, I was in the Delhi temple lying on the sofa. And Trivikram Maharaj, all old and wrinkled, came into the room and I said, "Maharaj, I can't bow down just like this, pranams." He says, "It's all right, you know." He says, "It's all right." He said, "Because," he said, you're supposed to offer respect to an elderly person. So, you know. So he said, "And you are older than me because you are closer to death." So, you know, that was sort of, these are the little things you sort of, poof, like a bucket of cold water, waking you up. And I sort of realized it again, that, you know, yes, there's no guarantee that we may even get 50. So therefore, you at 50 you have to, but you may as well, you know, when you go into the Grihastha ashram, there are different ways you can approach it. In the scriptures, you know that the Grihastha ashram, everybody's in bright white, so I think is a relevant discussion. How do you get it so white? Only a wife can wash a dhoti so white. When a man is alone, it's you have to go in saffron because it's such a drag to wash a white dhoti. God, you see every spot, you know. Absolutely. Yes, so some who get, you have heard in scriptures that the Grihastha ashram has been compared to the Andhakupa, the blind well, isn't it? Yeah? Have you heard? You have heard. So, you may as well admit it, you know. You've heard. So, when you get into the Grihastha ashram, there is different ways to approach that well. One way is, okay, here we go, 1, 2, 3, head down and you dive in, you know. And the other way is, of course, every well also has a little, some steps on the side, a little ladder, and you could possibly go some steps down. And you know what? It's not absolutely necessary to go all the way to the bottom. Believe it or not, it's not required. You don't have to. Even when you enter into the Grihastha ashram, you don't have to actually go to the bottom. Some people think, you know, like, now that we've gone in, now we got to see how deep we can take it. You know, I'm still going deeper. But it is not a law of nature. Or, you know, it's not absolutely required that way. So therefore, one could even possibly, before 50, already start thinking like, well, maybe some types of sense gratification, maybe we just don't need them. Nah, well, come on, you know, don't be a square. What did we get married for? Well, what did we get married for? To go back to Godhead. Come on. Be real. No, really. I'm serious. To go back to Godhead. You're not telling me that you got married to go back to Godhead. No, really. That's what it was for. Oh, come on. You know. You read about that in the fairy tales, you know. You read about that in the Bhagavatam, but not in real life. Is it? I always like to tell how Jayadvaita Maharaj gave a seminar here in Radhadesh called The Hopes and Horrors of Household Life. And, you know, even before he started, it was already a big thing, a big discussion. People were saying, you know, who's he? Who's he to speak about the hopes and horrors of household life? What does he know about it anyway? He was never married. Why doesn't he speak about the hopes and horrors of sannyas life? Right? So there was a lot of discussion before the actual seminar took place. Right? And then, you know, somehow or other, I missed the first session. I don't know why. I had something to do. So I came late. But I reached here in Radadesh. The premiere was here in Radadesh. And I reached here, and I just came after it was finished, and people were just getting out of the seminar room. So someone else had also missed it and was just ahead of me and said and asked the devotee, "How was it? How was it?" And someone said, "Oh, it was very theoretical. All quotes from the scriptures." I thought that was really far out answer. That was really so revealing. Yes, when the scriptures remain theoretical for you, that means you're not following them. That's obvious. And when you're following the scriptures, they become practical. So the scriptures, dear devotees, you know, I learned this from Sachinanda Maharaj, you know. Every once in a while, you say, "Dear devotees, you know, I'm going to tell you something very important. Right? So I want you to really pay full attention to this, and you will find that it will very much benefit your spiritual life." Yeah. Right. So, you know, and what was it again? Oh, God, I'm senile again, forgot again what I was going to say. It's, huh? Follow the scriptures becomes practical, my friend. That's what I was saying, yes. So, maybe the scriptures indeed, you know, are actually, it's a guide to life. Yeah, you can actually, if you follow them, then, you know, something happens to your life. It's pretty far out. Far out. Amazing. Never thought of that. Really. Thought it was very interesting, these books, but I never thought that they were designed to be followed. But that actually is the deeper purpose of the Bhagavatam. It's very deep and hidden purpose. It's known to very few, but actually Bhagavatam is a guide to life, believe it or not. I know it's a shock, but you know, this is it. So with that, I got to wrap it up now. Let us just do something for eternity. Shall I have a dramatic end? Go out with a bang? All right. I may as well. Otherwise, you know, the class doesn't have oomph, right? And, you know, the handbook of how to give an SB class says that at the beginning of the class, you must have an attention getter and you must go out with an... Your class must have oomph, you know? So... Okay, a few years ago, I was in the Czech Republic and for a summer camp, which we have every year out there in the forest somewhere, lots of fun, 400 devotees. We have a whole camping to ourselves, and it's pretty good. It was lots of fun, and we were just finished with all the seminars and this, that. It was just getting time for prasadam, and I was just getting ready for... well, you know, the kind of stuff that sannyasis eat, you know, steamies and, you know, and kind of, while everyone else has pakoras and, you know, and all the other stuff. So I wasn't there, but suddenly I heard Namaste Narasimhaya, 400 devotees. So go like, what's going, that's not Saravija Jal. What's that? You know? Why are they chanting the Sringa prayers for? You know? So I was like thinking, like, well, what's going on, you know? So I thought, like, well, maybe should have a look, you know. So I sort of came there. I saw this man lying on the ground, all gray and flapping, right? He was dying, yeah, in the middle of Prasadam. What a thing to do. I mean, better die after Prasadam. You know. He died in the middle of Prasadam. You never know when it's going to happen. And he was lying there, and all the devotees were chanting. They had shifted to Hare Krishna now. But the temple president had called a helicopter, right? So, you know, within a minute, there was a helicopter there, or 2 minutes. Guys in red overalls running in, carrying machines and, you know, running in, emergency, getting ready, move over, yes, okay, everybody quiet. So, you know, president told us all be quiet, so we're all like, okay, softly chanting that. And the guys bring out this machine and try to give the man an electric shock on the heart to bring his heart back to action. And 400 devotees are all thinking, let him die. Let him die now. Because, you know, if he lives, they're going to take him to the hospital and he's going to probably die in the hospital. Let him die now in the middle of the devotees. Right? Well, you know, when 400 Vaishnavas, and there was some soft chanting still going on, even the TP couldn't stop it. So, well, he didn't want to make it look too much like a heavy sect, you know what I mean? Yeah, something to say for that also. Keep some good PR. Anyway, so we all wish the man to die, and I'm happy to report to you that it worked, you know? He died, and that was it, right? Gauravani was there because she's nodding like anything. Huh? One devotee was so shocked, she almost also died. Anyway, so the hospital team took care of her instead of the guy and saved her life. So at least they had something to do. Well, afterwards, you know, nobody knew him. So we sort of found out a little bit more about this man. And it turned out nobody knew him, but one devotee knew him and said, yes, I know this man. He has been buying books from me for years. And actually, some years ago, he bought a full set of Bhagavatam. And then recently, I met him and he had finished the Bhagavatam. He said, I finished it. Do you have any other books? And he said, yeah, I sold him another book. I said, but why don't you come to the summer camp? It's very soon. He said, okay, I'll come. So he came to the summer camp, and I said, then in the summer camp, it was the first time that he chanted Hare Krishna, and that he walked around Tulsi in the morning, etc. And then he just left. I said, that's amazing. He finished Bhagavatam, started chanting Hare Krishna, walked around Tulsi and everything, and then just died. He said, like, that was amazing. Huh? Who was this man that this was given to him? This is not given to many devotees. But we could see that in his life, he had invested in his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. So enough talk about Puranjan, Puranjani, enough talk about ashrams this way, that way. Choose whatever ashram you like and be happy with it. But do something for the eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Now, does that have oomph or not? Okay, so any questions, any comments? Rick is knockout. Too much oomph. Okay, well, now drink a little water. Gosh, I've been too clear.
It's a nice
Vairagya, Vidya, Nidya, Bhakti, Yogam. At one point, you realize that the material energy is a lot of trouble. Right? Dealing with the material energy is a lot of trouble. Right? At one point, you realize it. Isn't it, Manohar? I mean, you know, and then you just think about it, you know, and think, do I really want this, you know? And at that point you think, well, you know, maybe I don't need to do all these things anymore. Like these days, when I see, before, when I saw a mountain, I had this strong urge to go to the top. Now I don't have that anymore. It's like, I see the mountain and I think, like, nice mountain. And that's it, you know. I'm quite happy to stay in the valley. Quite okay with that. Absolutely no desire to go to the top. But before, I had to go. I had to do it, you know. So at one point, you just realize that, yeah, but it's nice to go to the top, but it's a hell of a lot of trouble also to get there, and then got to go back down, and on the way, it's quite a trip, mountains actually, climbing mountains. So eventually become naturally renounced. And the more we get attached to Krishna, the more we think, why bother with all these material things? Like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta chanting in his hut, and the roof was leaking, and he just put up his umbrella. Said, you know, why would I bother fixing the roof and stop chanting? So this is the natural tendency where renunciation develops. Yeah. Yeah. But the main thing is not renunciation. Renunciation is not even one of the limbs of bhakti. It's only preliminary. It's a little helpful, it says. That's all. It's not even spiritual. But renunciation is good because it gives you time and energy for Krishna. Because if you have 12 kids, right, and you have to feed them all day, then, you know, you have no more time for your deities. Right? It gets difficult. So then when you get rid of the kids, you know, say you're old enough now, time to take care of yourself. So then, you know, suddenly you have an ocean of time. This is what I went through all the ashrams, and when I took vanaprastha, the one thing that I noticed is that I had so much time. I chanted all my rounds, and then I still had time left. Then I read, and then I thought, what do I do now? Huh? I had so much time. This is the one thing about the Grihastha ashram. I have nothing against the Grihastha ashram. The only thing I have against the Grihastha ashram is that it takes so much time. It just eats up all your time. That's why I took sannyas. Any other question? Yes. Yeah. An helicopter. Well. This sounds politics, you know. you want me to advise you to revolt against the temple presidents? Okay. No, it's a joke actually. I'm sorry. The whole class is full of jokes, so I can't resist it this morning. But no, from a spiritual point of view, it may not always be necessary to call in the helicopter. But we have obligations as a society, as a movement. You know, we are living in the bigger world, and we have to be part of it, and we have to follow certain things. So we cannot just live by the Bhagavatam alone. We also have to live by the government standards and laws, and you know, if someone's dying and you don't report that is neglect. You have a duty to report 112, you know, and call them, and then the helicopter or whatever it is comes, and yeah, they do their thing. And so if we don't do that, then we are reconfirming that we are indeed a fanatic cult, and that actually our cult is harmful for public health, and that we are irresponsible and not properly taking care of our people. So, and then, you know, maybe we should go on the blacklist again and things like this. Yeah. So these things are sensitive. So temple presidents, they have a good brain for these things, you know, and they're sensitive to these kind of social connections that we have, and they consider all these things. And whereas others, you know, they may not always see all these practical considerations in the same detail. Therefore, we should just trust our TPEs and say, you know, one has to become detached and say, yeah, well, leave it up to the management. Let them decide. Let the management decide. We should not all become backseat drivers. Nothing is as disturbing as a backseat driver, you know. When you're in the seat, you know, trying. Oh, watch out, to the left, four people in the car, you know, trying to say, no. I mean, at one point, you know, a driver just stops the car and gets out, and, okay, drive yourself, and they don't have a license. So, now, although I don't always agree with the management, or I could say it in another way, although I rarely agree with the management, still, I think I let the managers manage, and I try not to interfere with that. Okay, whatever you guys do, as you like. If you want to call the helicopter, call the helicopter. But when I die, don't call no helicopter. If I die in a temple, just let me die in a temple. You know, when I was in Vrindavan, severely injured, I couldn't speak, but I managed to say one thing to the devotees, and that was, not out of the Dham. That I meant, because I wasn't going to die on a parking lot in Delhi. Get injured in Vrindavan and die in Delhi? Forget it. So I sympathize with you, but also with the temple president, because, you know, what to do? We live in a rotten world. What do you think? You're thinking like anything. Sometimes the temple president's not a devotee. Excuse me. To do. Prabhupada says, one man for a village for a nation. Remember? One man for a family for a village for a nation. So we have to think about that. We have to think of the interest of ISKCON, which is the collective facility for all the devotees. So just to put so much effort for one devotee, you know, one year there was a devotee here who one day was chanting japa in the fields and saw this beautiful little calf. And then he couldn't resist it anymore, and he felt for the calf going to the slaughterhouse, and he just took the calf and saved the calf and put it in the barn in hiding here in Radhadesh. You know, well, you know, from my sentiment, I felt sympathy for the calf also. In fact, you know, I even offered to raise money, you know, to buy the calf. Right, but anyway, that was too complicated, and in the end, the calf was returned. I felt a little sorry that the calf, who had for a short time found shelter of the devotees, had to go back to doomsday. So, I also have had thoughts like that over the years, you know. I saw 100 calves locked up at a railway station. I felt like letting them out while I was chanting japa in Australia. Yeah. But I also thought, what's the point? They'll catch them anyway. So, we are caught between our feelings and our intelligence. So for the interest of ISKCON as a whole, we have to cooperate to some extent with the authorities. But if it happens to you, we won't call the helicopters. And if it happens to me, don't call no helicopters either, okay? We have a pact. I don't want no helicopters. Well, gosh, she's not satisfied, but what can I do? It's hard to satisfy everyone. But we don't have to call a helicopter for somebody who cuts himself in the finger, or we don't have to overdo it, you know what I mean? But that much I grant you. Okay, getting out of hot water and getting ready for a break. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.